I'm going to tell you the story of my first love. And it's a story that sounds pretty lovely at first. We met on an island off the coast of New Hampshire at summer camp when I was 12. Dan was very tall and part Cherokee, so he had a sharply planed face, but he also had bright blue eyes. He was a dancer, so very thin and graceful. And the overall effect was to make him both beautiful and odd-looking, like a heron might be both beautiful and odd-looking and thin and graceful. I was one of those girls who read all the time, so that I sometimes actually walked into people or fell off of curbs. I had hair that was too long because I wouldn't let anyone cut it, so it was ragged at the bottom, and I parted it right down the center. And I used to write poetry about things like children in the 19th century dying of smallpox and their parents weeping over their graves. So this was a subject about which I knew nothing. So I was at camp for a week, and then I went home, and I got a letter from Dan saying, we had only been friends at camp, but saying that he was deeply in love with me. He wanted to spend the rest of our lives together. And he would cry sometimes because he would think about how long it would be before we could actually be together. And he didn't mean before we could see each other, because we actually both lived in Maryland. We lived about 45 minutes apart. But he meant before we could have a relationship, because I was 12 and had just finished sixth grade, and Dan had been my camp counselor. He was 18 and had just finished his freshman year at the Naval Academy. And so my reaction to this letter was twofold. I was excited and thrilled, of course, but I also felt dismay. And my dismay was because I realized I wasn't in love with this person. I had had a crush on him that summer at camp, but I was 12 years old. I had had crushes on like six people at camp. I could manufacture a crush pretty much out of thin air at that point. But I convinced myself that I must be wrong, that if he thought that we were madly in love, we must be madly in love. And we started writing. He would write me three or four long letters a week. I couldn't keep up with that, but I tried to write once a week. And our plan was that until I was 18, we would date people our own ages, and we would be secretly, painfully, platonically in love. So in 30 years, I've told very few people this story, until tonight. But it's something that most of my good friends don't know about me. And one reason is that, of course, when people hear 12 and 18, they assume that Dan was interested in me for my youth, that he was a pedophile. And I think, in fact, he was something more complicated. He was a romantic. He fell in love with an idea of who I was and an idea of what we meant to each other. And that, therefore, because this idea wasn't really based on any evidence, no possible contrary evidence could get in either. But there was one way in which he, I think, was attracted to my youth, and that was that he liked being the one who knew things. When I look back at his letters to me, they're full of advice. And he had been my camp counselor, after all, so he liked the idea of mentoring me. So I have this very strong memory when I was 13. We had been secretly and platonically involved for a year, and we were sitting on the porch at camp, and he had brought out an anthology of short stories, and he said, "I really want you to read this one," and he opened the book, and he tried to hand it to me, and I saw that it was open to Harrison Bergeron, which is a Vonnegut story. And I also saw that this was the book that my seventh grade honors English class had used as a textbook. But I didn't say, "Oh, that was my textbook," or, "Oh, I read that for a class." I just said, "No, I've read that," and I didn't take the book. And then he said, okay, I want you to read this one." And he tried to hand it to me, open to the lottery. And I said, "No, I've read that." And this happened maybe three more times, because the stories that occurred to him as obvious for teaching a 13-year-old girl about short fiction were the same stories that had been obvious to my seventh grade teacher. And then he opened the book to John Steinbeck's Chrysanthemums, which I had not read, and he tried to hand it to me, and I said, no, I've read that one. And I did this again and again until he gave up. When I look back now, I think that I was a somewhat precocious and lonely 12-year-old who didn't fit in all that well with my peers at my big suburban junior high school, smallpox poetry. And that Dan was a somewhat awkward and lonely 18-year-old. My guess is that he didn't fit in all that well with his peers at the Naval Academy. And I think that maybe we met about in the middle, that maybe we were both about 15 emotionally. And we had a relationship that was actually pretty appropriate for two 15-year-olds. He would get leave and he would come down to my house. My parents would host him for the weekend and we would sit on the floor in my bedroom and talk about books. Or we met secretly in Georgetown and went to the Key Theater and saw Hitchcock retrospectives. When I was 13 and he was 19, we kissed for the first time. This was shortly after I claimed to have read every short story ever written in the world. And after that, I started sneaking out at night, and we would park by the canal near my house, and we would talk all night and make out. So that what we were doing wasn't actually very different than what my friends were doing, but the emotional content, the emotional weight we assigned to it was different. We began taking more and more risks. There was a weekend when my parents were out of town, and he came and stayed with me for the weekend, even though I also had a babysitter in the house for me and my younger sisters. And eventually my parents figured out that our relationship wasn't just a friendship, that it was romantic, and we were forbidden to ever talk to each other again. And we didn't talk for 3 years. And then I got back in touch with him. By now I was 16. I was a junior in high school. Dan was 23 and an officer in the Navy. He was living in Florida and flying planes. And he flew up to Maryland to see me. And this was meant to be the last time we would ever see each other. It was meant to be a way of ending on a better note than we had ended. I borrowed my mother's car and had my license for about 2 weeks at this point. And we met at a parking lot near my house. And I insisted on driving, so he got into the car. And I drove up Clara Barton Parkway feeling weirdly pissed off and defiant without actually understanding why I felt that way. Although now I can see he had never seen me drive before. I was showing how much older I was. And I think that that was a large part of why I was able to initiate this meeting after all this time. Partly, logistically, I had my license. But also, I felt in some ways like I had caught up. I had had other boyfriends by this point, one of whom I had loved. I had tried drinking and drugs and shoplifting and cutting classes. And I was immature enough to think that those things made me mature. So we drove up the parkway, and after a little while, Dan asked where we were going. And I realized there was no possible place for us to go on a Saturday afternoon in my suburban hometown. So we ended up parked in another parking lot by the canal. And we talked all afternoon. And then at some point we kissed. And then we both cried to show how doomed and powerful our love was. And then it was time for me to take him home, or take him back to his car and get home myself so my parents would not begin to worry about where I might be. And so I put the key in the ignition, and then I began the process I went through every time I drove my mother's car, which was that I didn't actually know how to take off the parking brake. I didn't realize that there was a system that you had to push in the button and pull up and then push down. And so I would just yank and tug, and sometimes the button was pushed in, and sometimes I was pushing down with both hands. And then at some point, magically, the parking brake would just pop off because I would get the right sequence. So Dan was watching me go through this absurd ritual that I didn't actually understand was absurd, because I thought it was parking brakes that were absurd. And then he reached over and he took off the brake for me. And then he did something that I've thought of hundreds of times since. But first I'll tell you what I did next, which was, of course, not to let this be the last time that we saw each other, to throw myself back into this relationship. I was still in high school. He was still in Florida, but he would fly up every month or two. And we would meet at French restaurants and split a bottle of red wine. Or we would go and see weird three-hour documentaries at art house theaters in D.C. that my friends wouldn't have wanted to see with me. Or we met at hotels and drank champagne. And the next morning, we would order room service, breakfast, and eat in bed. And even though when I thought about it, I knew it was really strange, it didn't feel strange. It just felt really fun and exciting and special. And so where does that leave me now when I think back to this first experience of love or of something like love? I think clearly it was wrong for an 18-year-old man to pursue a relationship with a 12-year-old girl. But when I think of it, what strikes me even more is just how deeply strange it was that he was content to spend college weekends sitting on the floor in my room, eating gummy bears, talking about Stephen King novels, and whether or not maybe there was some redeeming quality to communism. I have a daughter now who is beautiful and precocious. She has very long blonde hair. She's the kind of kid who reads so much that she sometimes walks into people or falls off curbs. And if there was a man 6 years older who was interested in her, I would have his ass arrested. And yet, for all that, I can't quite wish it hadn't happened to me. And this is the other reason that I have told this story so few times. I think that we're only comfortable with uncomfortable narratives when there's some kind of payoff, when we can say, oh, this messed up thing happened, but I learned such a great lesson from it. But I don't particularly think I learned great lessons. Or when we can say, this messed up thing happened, but I'm so much better and stronger for it. But I don't know that I'm better or stronger. I just know that I'm different than I would have been. And that to disown that part of my history would feel like disowning what I've become since. Anyway, this is what happens next in the car. I've just gone through this whole struggle with the parking brake, and Dan has released it for me. And I'm blushing terribly, and my armpits are prickling with sweat, but I'm thinking I'm still going to escape this with my dignity. And I kind of flip my hair, and I laugh, and I go to put the car in reverse. And then Dan reaches over, and he pulls the parking brake back on, and he says, now let me show you. Thank you.